welcome to another edition of National Football Authority Radio. I am your host, Matt Baxendale, a.k.a. Bax. You guys can read my writing 3-4 times a week here at NationalFootballAuthority.com. I'm also a weekly columnist over at Bucknuts.com. And it's so great to get back here on National Football Authority Radio Podcast. We got a great show coming up for you today. I'm going to sit here and discuss a little bit about the top 25 through 5 weeks of college football. And then we got a great segment coming up featuring both Russell Baxter, he's the Pro Football Guru, and Alec Frost. We're going to be talking about the National Football League. Over a half an hour of great NFL talk. And some of the topics we're going to get to, of course, are the shocking Detroit Lions, who could legitimately go to 5-0 this Monday night. And frankly, when was the last time the Lions were good? It's been a decade. They were an absolute disaster, and all of a sudden, they could start the season 5-0. Incredible. We'll also touch on the Buffalo Bills, who've had a great start, and of course, the flip side of the equation, which are the Philadelphia Eagles and their unbelievably bad start, which culminated last week by blowing a 23-6 lead against the San Francisco 49ers. But first things first here, we're going to get to the NFL in a moment. We're going to get to our great guests in a moment, but there's something I want to do, and normally we go off the top of my head to start the show, but this week I'm just going to go very, very basic for you. See, I am one of the voters in the National Football Authority College Football Top 25 poll, all right? So I figure, you know what? I'm looking forward to this week to actually explaining my thought process on my votes. And now a lot of people, they just pick who they think's the best team and they go from there, which is great. And right now in the season, there's so many teams that haven't lost the game yet, that's a way to do it. But my method's a little different. You see, right now, if I had to pick a team that I think would win the national championship, it's the Oklahoma Sooners. I said that in preseason when we did the National Football Authority Top 25, when we did all the conference previews. And that opinion hasn't changed. Oklahoma's 4-0. They've got wins at Florida State. They got a good win over Missouri. They're a team that I think is great, but they're not my number one team right now. You see, the reason for that is that I want to be the person who looks at the results on the field, not my perceptions of the results of a certain team. I want to know who they've beaten, where they've beaten them, and how impressive they look so in victory. All right? That's the bottom line for me. And that's how I'm going to do it. Call me a human computer, if you will, but I want to reward the teams who play the best teams and beat the best teams. And that's why I'm doing my top 25 a little differently, though it will look similar in some regards. So without any further ado, I'm going to explain my top 25 vote. Let's start. I'm just going to give the top 10 because that would be a very long and annoying thought process. But you know what? If I did the whole top 25, but my top 10 is a pretty good place to start. So start with my number 10 team. And I'm talking about the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. Georgia Tech is currently 5-0, coming off of a win at North Carolina State. And here's their resume. Win at home over North Carolina, who's only got one loss. The win at North Carolina State, and they also beat Kansas at the Big 12. Those are three respectable wins against BCS conference opposition. Now, my number 9 team right now is the Stanford Cardinal. And this is a good example of a team that I think should be ranked higher if you just base it upon their merits, but don't base it upon who they've beaten. Because let's face it, who have they beat? UCLA, who's not going to make a bowl game. They won at Duke, who will be lucky to make a bowl game. And they won at Arizona, who will be lucky to make a bowl game. Now, they're ahead of Georgia Tech because they have three wins over what I consider three better BCS conference opponents, two of which are on the road. But they're still not a – they haven't played anybody good yet. I think Stanford could be a team this year that could run and win the Pac-12. They're my top-rated Pac-12 team. But they haven't played enough good teams yet. My number 8 team is the Boise State Broncos. And, you know, a lot of people probably have Boise State higher than that. But Boise State's only game that they've won is against Georgia. And that's a lot of credit to them. I don't want to take it away from them. But their other wins are Tulsa, Nevada, at Toledo. And Toledo played them fairly tough. So, you know, Toledo's not a terrible team. But Boise State right now, they've only got one good win. And that's going to hurt them the way I do my top 25. Now, my number 7 team this week is the Illinois Fighting Illini. Now, a lot of people are going to go, what? Illinois? Are you kidding me? Well, here's why. First of all, Illinois has 5 wins. They're 5-0. And they've beaten Arizona State, who right now it looks like they're going to win the Pac-12 South. They just beat Northwestern last week, coming down back from an 18-point deficit to win that game. They moved to 5-0. They beat Western Michigan and Arkansas State. Now, their one downfall to them is they did play all their first 5 games at home. And, you know, that kind of helps. But you know what? This is Illinois' best start in 40 or 50 years. So 5-0 Fighting Illini, my number 17 this week. Now, my number 16 this week is Oklahoma State Cowboys, 4-0, wins over Arizona at Texas A&M. The problem is that they were off last week. They've only got four wins. They haven't really beaten any great teams yet, but they've won every game in impressive fashion. And that's why they're in my number 16. All right, so to recap, 10 through 6 for me. Number 10 is Georgia Tech. Number 9 is Stanford. Number 8 is Boise State. Number 7 is Illinois. And number 6 is Oklahoma State. Ready for the top 5? I know I am. All right. So let's get started here with the top five. Some of these will be fairly similar to what you see from a lot of people. Some of it will be a little different. Let's start with my number five team, which is Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin is very much like I just mentioned with Stanford. Wisconsin's a team that, if I had to rank it over how I think it's going to end up, they'd be in the top three right now. They've been awesome so far. But the only good team they've played this year is Nebraska, and they beat the crap out of them. They beat them like a drum, really. But their other games were Oregon State, who's still winless, UNLV, who's terrible, and then Northern Illinois and Chicago. So it's not really a great resume, but they've been so dominant, and they have five wins. That's why they're my number five team. Now, here's a team at number four that I mentioned earlier, the Oklahoma Sooners, who are still my pick to win the national championship. So, Oklahoma fans, don't get angry at me. But based purely on resume, I can't rank Oklahoma any higher than fourth right now. And I should also add that I have no hesitance to change my rankings on a weekly basis in a very dramatic fashion. Oklahoma is number four because right now they have a great win at Florida State, and a good home win over Missouri, and then they haven't really played anybody else. This week over Texas is really going to be a stiff test for them, and that'll help them move up in the rankings. My number three team right now, and again, this is an example of how I do it a little differently because I don't think this team's going to finish in the top five. I'm talking about the Clemson Tigers, 5-0. And now when you think of underachievement in college football, you think Clemson, right? Well, maybe not this year. They beat Auburn and ended their long winning streak. The only loss Auburn has this year, by the way. Then they beat Florida State. Another impressive victory, put themselves in the driver's seat in the ACC Atlantic Division. And then they went on the road last week and beat Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, in Lane Stadium. That is just an impressive three straight wins for the Clemson Tigers. And honestly, those are the three of their toughest games they're going to have all year. They don't play Miami the rest of the year. And the only other team in the ACC right now that's going to challenge them is Georgia Tech in a couple weeks. So Clemson right now, based upon the schedule they've played, they've earned my number three ranking at 5-0. Now, my top two, they're pretty similar to everybody else's because, let's face it, we all know that the two most impressive teams in the country this year have been Alabama and LSU. I have Alabama 2 and LSU 1 because LSU has played the harder schedule thus far. They went to Mississippi State and won. They went to West Virginia and won. They beat Oregon in Dallas. They're the only team to play three ranked opponents in the first 4 weeks. So that puts them a hair ahead of Alabama right now for my number one overall vote in the National Football Authority College Top 25 poll. But you know what? We both know that these two teams are going to face off on November 5th, and the winner in all likelihood is going to be the SEC champion and play for the national title this year. So we want to talk about projections. There's a lot of polls that do that. My poll every week will reward the best teams in terms of resume and success on the field, not what I think of those teams. All right. So that's why right now my number one team is LSU. But like I said earlier, it can always change. All right, well, then let's move away from college football here. We got a lot of great NFL discussion here. And all those college football teams that we were just talking about there, they're going to produce a lot of great NFL players. But you know what? This has been an unbelievable first quarter of the season. It's been offensive explosion everywhere. So we're going to bring in Alec Frost, and we're going to bring in Russell Baxter right after this. So stick around here on National Football Authority Radio. We'll be talking the NFL.
You're listening to National Football Authority Radio, NationalFootballAuthority.com, the shooting star of football coverage on the internet.
Welcome back to National Football Authority Radio. I am Matt Baxa. We're joined now by Alec Frost. He's hanging out up there at Central Michigan University. And to state right now, Alec, that is quite excited about the Detroit Lions. At 4-0, huge comeback against the Dallas Cowboys. Just talk about that game. I mean, most people probably thought it was over at halftime if they came back to win. What's the feeling like around the Great Lakes State right now?
I'll tell you what. You walk on campus, Central Michigan University, maybe last fall, the fall before that, you would see Michigan jerseys, Michigan State jerseys, maybe every once in a while one of those good Ohio State jerseys that you love so much. But now you can't walk 10 feet on campus without seeing a Lions hat or a Lions jersey. And I think a lot of people are excited. People that may not necessarily even be football fans are enjoying watching this team play, because it seems like no matter how far they get down, no matter how certain it seems they're going to lose, they don't. Obviously, the last 2 weeks have been a roller coaster ride. A 20-point deficit against Minnesota, in which there was absolutely no way you would figure with Adrian Peterson in the backfield that they would possibly be able to come back, because Minnesota would dominate ball control, but it never happened. Same thing with Dallas. Turnovers played a big part in that.
Well, I think another big factor in the Dallas game was Calvin Johnson's freakish athleticism. And I remember before the game, they were talking that on the defensive side of the ball, well, he's not that good. We go against better receivers in practice. I think Calvin Johnson may have proved them wrong, especially with that touchdown catch where he skied over three Dallas defenders. What's kind of the situation going on up there with the Matthew Stafford sort of coming into his own, staying healthy, and having two really good receivers in Pettigrew and Johnson? Is that something that a lot of people in Michigan really think is going to be something that's going to continue?
I think a lot of people consider this team a three-star team. They look at Matthew Stafford. He's finally healthy. It's beautiful. The guy with the glass arm that everyone was saying, if he didn't play well this year, they should draft Andrew Luck next April. Obviously, that's not going to happen. I think the other two are Calvin Johnson, which obviously, like you said, he's a freak of an athlete, 6'5", 230 pounds. That might be a little bit lower than it actually is, but that's what he's listed as. And Ndamukong Suh. Obviously, Brandon Pettigrew has had a terrific season. Last year, he led the team in receptions. No one really talks about that. After a disastrous year prior where he got injured on a tight end reverse, which you hardly ever see. It might have been a screen pass, actually. The point is, he had an awful, awful 2009 with that injury. Matthew Stafford as well. But 2010, last year, with Sean Hill and Drew Stanton, for the most part, he played very well. I would say this year, when you look at Calvin Johnson, obviously he's had two touchdowns in each of the first four games for the Detroit Lions. And if you remember the chatter Chris Carter was going with early on, he said that he's not even in the top five, maybe even not even in the top 10 wide receivers in the NFL.
That's a mistake.
Yeah. Whether it was his inability to run routes properly or what have you, the point is there's an NFL record out there, and it's the most touchdowns, the most consecutive games with two touchdowns or more in the receiving category. That's four straight games, two touchdowns in each, and the original holder of that record was Mr. Chris Carter, and now Calvin Johnson shares that record. So I think it's pretty brilliant that Chris Carter works for ESPN, and the Bears game is on Monday Night Football. There's a pretty good chance Calvin Johnson could break Chris Carter's record playing on Chris Carter's network. So that could be brilliant, brilliant TV.
Well, you know what they always said about Chris Carter? All he does is catch touchdowns. So if Calvin Johnson is taking over that role, I think it's pretty safe to say he is going to be among the elite receivers in the NFL for a long time. But, you know, you mentioned this Monday night game here coming up against the Bears in Detroit. And let's face it, Detroit's a team that has been, for the most part, really bad for a very long time. I mean, it's been 15 years, I believe, since the era of, I believe it was the mid-90s was the last time that they made a playoff run. And this is a team in Detroit that has really been moribund. I mean, I remember going to see a Steelers and Lions game about 5 years ago, and the Lions fans sitting next to me had absolutely zero illusions that their team even had a chance. And all of a sudden, they've had this great turnaround. They've got a lot of good young talent. And this Monday night game, they have a chance to go 5-0, the Detroit Lions. So I guess, what does this game kind of mean to the city of Detroit, and what do they have to do to not fall behind by a couple scores earlier, like it's been their habit in the early going?
Talk about the city of Detroit. Obviously, the entire country for the past few years has been in an economic downturn for the most part, and that economy hasn't been too friendly to Detroit. The city, especially through that decade in which the Lions were absolutely atrocious, the Millenera, as we like to call it here, hopes were down. Obviously, the Tigers' run to the World Series in 2006 was a big lift, but Detroit's a football city. That's what it is. And things are getting better in Detroit. And obviously, this team, Martin Mayhew, Jim Schwartz and crew, they've done a great job of rebuilding from the ground up. They started by drafting a franchise quarterback. He already had a weapon in tow with Calvin Johnson. They also drafted Brandon Prater with the draft pick, if you remember, from the Roy Williams trade with Dallas. They got Brandon Prater, and they established an identity on offense. Then with Ndamukong Suh and all the free agency things that they did this offseason and the offseason past, they've started to build a foundation. And this 4-0 start is impressive because everyone around Detroit has been saying the same thing. I could see 7-9. I could see 8-8. That would be a great season. Now people are thinking, can we actually contend with the Green Bay Packers? But I don't think that's going to be possible unless they shift from starting so slowly. Now, this wasn't a problem against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, I believe, Matthew Stafford came out and threw 250 yards plus in the first half against Tampa Bay. Looked fantastic. Then they decided to get conservative with a 10-point lead in the second half, and they almost lost it against Tampa Bay. Then Kansas City, they dismantled them. But the last 2 weeks, it seems like this. They can't establish anything on the ground. And if they can't protect Matthew Stafford and give him time to complete throws, they won't be successful. They'll continue to slow start. And that comes down to Jeff Backus. Jeff Backus obviously had a career year last year. No one realizes it because, well, Matthew Stafford wasn't there anymore, and most people weren't interested because the Lions were a 6-10 team. Okay, Jeff Backus had a great year last year. This year, coming in, he had that tricep injury. No, I believe it was a chest injury. Anyway, the point is he didn't play nearly the entire preseason, and that may have had something to do with the fact that he's not played very well. If you remember in the Minnesota game, when the score was tied, there's about 2 minutes to go, Detroit was trying to win the game. He had two false start penalties, basically consecutively, and that's something that a veteran shouldn't do. He hasn't missed a game his entire career, and obviously the last time Matthew Stafford played the Chicago Bears, it didn't end well for him. Julius Peppers came off the edge against Jeff Backus and basically ruined his second year in the NFL. So I think vitally, of the utmost importance, the most paramount thing, is that the Lions protect Matthew Stafford and they try to establish a running game. I realize this is a great passing team. That's exactly what they are. They shouldn't change that. But they need to, as they have in weeks past, stay committed to the running game no matter what. Keep the balance. Don't have Matthew Stafford drop back 50 times like we know that Jay Cutler from time to time does. But the fact is, in order for them to stay out of these large holes that they're in, they cannot allow Julius Peppers and crew to wreak havoc in the backfield with Matthew Stafford. He needs
time. They can't be one-dimensional at all. That's something that's been a problem for the Lions. And another thing I think has really hurt the Lions is that they lost Mekhi Lashore in the preseason. This is the guy that ran for 1,600 yards last year in college. He was supposed to be the yin to Javid Best-Siang, and they would have had two very good young runners. And let's face it, Javid Best has a history of concussions, so they can't really run him 30 times a game. So you're right, they need to find some balance here. Before we let you go here, Alec, I have one more question about the Lions for you. And you mentioned earlier Ndamukong Suh, who, let's face it right now, he's flat out indominant. This guy has been impressive ever since his senior year at Nebraska. But the one thing we've seen with him the first couple of years here for him in the NFL is that he always seems to get in trouble for a stupid penalty every couple games. And this, you have to wonder, is Sue's temper going to get in the way of the Lions getting the job done on a late hit penalty? This has kind of been a problem for him so far. Is this a trend, or is this just kind of been bad luck from oversensitive officials?
I believe it's a combination of the two. Last week, the penalty in which, if you remember, Dallas only scored 3 points in the second half last week. And those 3 points were after the Lions intercepted Bobby Carpenter and Chris Houston both turned interceptions for touchdowns. Dallas got the ball back. it was a big third down. Ndamukong Suh finally got pressure on Tony Romo, and it really wasn't an excessively late hit. I believe he kind of made contact with his hand to Tony Romo's face, and obviously that's not a great thing. But his temper does get in the way from time to time, and he's a very aggressive and talented player, but he needs to rein it in every once in a while. And I don't worry as much about Sue as him committing these penalties. I worry about them being called on him because as dominant.
So it's overzealous officials in a lot of ways, it seems like here, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, from time to time, he does make a boneheaded play, and there aren't many players in the NFL that don't make those plays. But I think now it seems like he has basically this mark on his back that says, hey, this guy is one of these guys. He's not up there with Jerome Harrison or anything like that, but because of how talented he is and how he sacks quarterbacks, because he doesn't just lay them to the ground gently, if you know what I mean.
No, he spikes them into the ground.
I think Brown fans are well aware of what Ndamukong Suh can do to quarterbacks, whether fair or unfair. But the point is, his aggressive play is a double-edged sword. Most of the time, it's going to do great things.
Well, there you go. Ndamukong Suh, the most indominant defensive tackle that I can remember seeing come out of college in a very long time. And before we let you go here, Alec, 5-0 Lions? Is it going to happen on Monday night, or are the Bears going to trip them up?
I think it'll be a very close game, but I do not think the Lions will have to come back. I think they will lead throughout.
Oh, there you go. All right, well, as we say goodbye to Alec Frost, thank you so much for coming on. We say hello to Mr. Russell Baxter. Russell, you there?
I am, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and we're continuing here at National Football Authority Radio with Russell Baxter. He is the Pro Football Guru. And, Russell, it's been a while. I'm glad to get you on the phone here. And, you know, a quarter of the way through the NFL season here, let's cut right to the chase. What's going on with the Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, you know, when you make that many changes, you know, it's really interesting. We have seen teams do this. I think the Washington Redskins probably come to mind more than anybody else in the NFL, where you make wholesale changes on one or both sides of the football. And when the Redskins do it, it never seems to work. And for some reason, I think everybody thought that it might work in Philadelphia. And granted, you know, they have Andy Reid there, and he's the longest tenured coach in the league and one of the best, there's no doubt about it. But when you make as many changes as they did, and I think I'm more talking on the defensive side of the football more than anything else, it takes time to gel. Throw in a new defensive coordinator who's really a first-time defensive coordinator, and Juan Castillo, who was the offensive line coach there, and you're going to have problems. You know, I hear all the time, you know, it's a league of quarterbacks, you know, the quarterback-driven league. You know, you hear that all the time as well. The Eagles, you know, except for the Giants game, haven't had any problems scoring points this year. In fact, if you look at the last three games, they've scored 70 points. That's, you know, almost 24 a game. But
should be enough to win in the NFL.
Yeah, but they've given up 88. That's the problem. And when you have a 20-point lead at home, you should close out the game. The Cowboys found that out last week, and certainly the Eagles found that out last week. And the thing that was so mystifying about the 49ers game is this was a San Francisco offense in the first three games of the year that was averaging less than 215 total yards a game. And in the second half against Philadelphia, it exceeded that total in one half. So there are definitely some defensive problems. A lot of them seem like they're underneath with the Eagles. There's a lot of talent there, but it takes time to gel. Football is a game of cohesion, okay? This isn't handball. This isn't, you know, tennis. This isn't bowling. You know, you got to get 11 guys on the same page. And defensively, at least, it doesn't look like the Eagles are there right now.
No, it certainly doesn't. I think as bad as the defense may have been over this first quarter of the season, I think it was particularly shocking last week to see them blow such a big lead against San Francisco. Like you said, the 49ers had done virtually nothing on offense the first three games, and then all of a sudden they come back from being down 23-6 to win that game in Philadelphia. That's a shocker in more ways than one. But I guess let's move on to another shocking topic after this last question for you. Did the Eagles turn it around?
I think eventually it'll just depend if they dig themselves a big hole. You know, the problem with being 1-3 right now in the NFC East is you're a game behind the Cowboys and you're 2 games behind the Giants and the Redskins. You've already lost to the Giants at home this year too. And when you know how it works in the division, you try to split and then you try to get your best divisional record possible. I mean, that's just common sense. And you can't afford to lose your divisional home games. So the Eagles have to somehow make up for that giant loss at home a couple of weeks ago. And, the NFC East is always interesting. Little known fact about the NFC East, even before realignment, going back to 1970 when it was formed, and then 2002 when it became a 14 division, no team has ever won that division with less than 10 wins. And who knows, maybe is this the year that a 9-7 team wins the NFC East? I guess we'll just have to stay tuned.
Well, this may or may not be the year. We're going to have to stay tuned. But we've been talking about shocking play in the terms of the Philadelphia Eagles defense. Let's turn to shocking play in a more positive manner. Let's talk about the play of Cameron Newton out of the gate for the Carolina Panthers. You know, this is a guy who a lot of people, myself included, had a lot of questions about whether he was going to be a viable NFL quarterback. But he has absolutely stormed out of the gates from a statistical perspective. In fact, he has come onto this team better than almost any other quarterback that I can remember in recent history in the NFL. Is this something with Cam Newton where he's going to be able to keep it up? And are we really looking at the next superstar in the making?
Well, listen, it's been a league where we have seen passing records, you know, the passing records in the league have dropped like flies in the first 4 weeks. But still, it's stunning. You know, and the thing I think was interesting is we spent this entire offseason, obviously he had some issues at Auburn that people talked about. And, when draft time comes, you talk about the good things. And then as you get closer to the draft, you talk about, the things they can't do. And I think there was a lot of that this year. There was a lot of referencing what Cam Newton couldn't do opposed to what he could do. And I'll tell you one thing he's done really, really well, besides establish himself, at least in my mind, as a team leader, a guy who's not interested in the numbers he's putting up. You know, it's funny. He's thrown for over 300 yards in all the games he lost. Bad weather against Jacksonville for a while there. You know, he had less than 200-yard passing the game he won, and I'm sure that's the one he was happiest about. You hear Cam Newton after the game, he wants to win. He doesn't want to set records. And the thing that I've noticed is his rapport with Steve Smith. And listen, if you're a quarterback and you have Steve Smith on your team, he's a good person to get to know. And it's not just wide open Steve Smith. He has dropped in passes all over the field to him. In fact, Steve Smith and him have combined for 12 plays of 20 or more yards this season. Now, I bring that up because it's only 4 games. And last year, Steve Smith, with the various quarterbacks he played with, played in 14 games, and he had 7 plays of 20 or more yards receiving. So the Newton to Smith connection in the basically the first quarter of the season has been prolific, to say the least.
Yeah, prolific to say the least is the best way you could possibly put it. I mean, Steve Smith's a guy with a long history of being a big playmaker. But last season, he certainly didn't live up to the lofty standards he had set for himself in previous seasons. So I guess we're going to have to wait and see if Cam Newton can keep it up. But like you said, passing records are falling left and right. And Cameron Newton may be the next rookie to set the next record in terms of rookie success in his first season. But I guess let's move on to one other topic here that I want to bring up with you. In the preseason, you wrote an article called The Biggest Playmakers in the NFL, one of which was Mike Wallace. And Mike Wallace was only one game away from setting the record for consecutive 100-yard performances before the Texans held him to only 77 last week. And he was one of the guys on your list of playmakers. Who have been some of the guys in the early part of the regular season here in the NFL that have really stood out to you? And maybe what has been the biggest, I guess, surprise in terms of great performers to you, aside, of course, from Cam Newton?
Well, I mean, you look at the numbers, you can't say you're ever surprised by what Wes Welker does now with the New England Patriots, but he has caught 40 passes already. In fact, he has nearly as many receiving yards, and I believe the number is 616 in 4 games,
than the entire Jacksonville Jaguars receiving core. And I'm not talking about just their wide receivers. I'm talking about Jaguars players this year, I believe, have combined for 621 yards worth of catches.
Wow.
And that's astounding, okay? So you can't be surprised. I think what I'm really surprised is the lack of defense in the league. Usually this is a league where the defenses kind of rule the first couple weeks of the season, and then the offenses get in gear. And, you know, be it the lockout, be it various reasons, you know, I don't know about you, and I don't know what the guys did while they were working out during the off season, but I don't know how many of them were practicing running, and I don't know how many were practicing stopping the run, but I just find it incredibly coincidental. And in 4 weeks into the season, we've seen 44 300-yard passing games. The record, you know, is in doubt. I believe it was 104 just 2 years ago. That was for a whole season. And we're more than one-third of the way there with 13 weeks to go.
Something 300-yard games ahead of breaking the record pace. That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think my point is I think I'm surprised. The two surprises for me is the amount of passing, the inability to hold leads. I mean, it's great. It's exciting. And so, look at the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills were the first team in NFL history to rally from at least an 18-point deficit 2 weeks in a row. I mean, that's astounding. I mean, we've been playing National Football League games for over 90 years. And that record lasted 1 week. Because the Detroit Lions came back in consecutive weeks from 20 and 24 points down. Even more impressive for the Lions is they did both of theirs on the road. Buffalo did theirs both at home. So I think my biggest surprise is the amount of passing and almost like a disappointing surprise, the inability to play defense at least the first month of this season.
Well, you just touched on the Buffalo Bills, so I got to bring them up with you now, Russell. This is a team that started off, they beat the Patriots for the first time in, I believe, 15 or 16 games.
They had lost 15 in a row to them, exactly.
Yeah, and then they ended up finally getting the big win with some late heroics, a couple interceptions from Tom Brady. Are the Buffalo Bills going to be that team? Because every year in the NFL, there's one team that comes out of nowhere, surprises everybody, and makes the playoffs. Are the Buffalo Bills going to be able to keep up this great start that they've had? We talked about their offense, but the defense is certainly a question mark. And you talked about not being able to hold leads. That was the Bills last week against the lowly Bengals. Are they for real, or is this just a great start and they're going to kind of fade back into the background as the season moves on?
Well, I think it's really going to depend on how they fare in their two games against the Jets and the rematch with New England up in Foxborough. You know, in a classic swing-around game of a letdown. You said the football is such an emotional game. We've already seen it early in this season. Okay. For instance, the Baltimore Ravens in week one blew out the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that, you know, had beaten them somewhat regularly, especially with Ben Roethlisberger. Remember, Ben Roethlisberger had beaten the Ravens seven times in a row, including the playoffs, and they handled them. And Baltimore, a week later, fell at Tennessee. Now, we didn't see Tennessee coming, but, you know, that's your classic letdown. Last week, the Bills, and remember, the Bills had beaten the Bengals 10 times in a row, okay? So they were in the same position that New England was in the week before, having beaten Buffalo 15 times in a row, and Cincinnati rallied to beat them. So, you know, this is a game of being even keel. Listen, you can go undefeated by winning every game by 1 point, okay? You know, it's not about blowing teams out. This isn't the BCS. This isn't, you know, the goal is to win the division. If not win the division, get in the playoffs. And as we have seen in recent years, just get in the playoffs. And remember, the last 6 years, three wild cards have won the Super Bowl, okay? The last 7 years, the team with the best record in the NFL hasn't won the Super Bowl. So very much like the mode of the NCAA basketball tournament, get in the playoffs. Hopefully you're playing your best football and you've got as good a chance as the other 11 teams to win a championship. But to go back to the Bills, it's going to depend on how they can get out of the division. You know how the AFC is? And the AFC is a little different this year. Obviously the Colts are down. The Steelers might be down.
and other teams are going to rise up to take their place. I mean, Tennessee is a surprise. Houston, we've kind of seen coming. Maybe this is the year San Diego doesn't get off to a horrendous start, and they're 3-1 so far. So limited spots. But I think, to me, the Bills' season is really predicated on at least three more games, two with the Jets and one with New England.
Those are certainly swing games. There's no question about it. And you touched real quick on the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think we all know what the problem is with the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's the worst offensive line in football. And if any other quarterback, besides from Ben Roethlisberger, was back there, they wouldn't make it through a game because that line is so porous. Roethlisberger's ability to extend plays is the only reason the Steelers are even 2-2 right now. That's certainly a team that needs some work. And they signed Max Starks today, who, if you remember, was on the line for them in all three of their Super Bowl trips. So maybe they'll be getting their line in shape. But the Steelers right now, certainly a team in flux. All right, Russell, well, one last thing here before we go. I was talking with Alex Frost earlier about the Lions right now. 4-0, which is shocking. I mean, in my lifetime, I don't ever remember the Lions being good more than maybe one or two seasons. So to see what is one of the most historic, yet one of the most traditionally moribund franchises in the NFL having success, especially when at a time when the city of Detroit has 20% unemployment, the state of Michigan is really in economic distress, in many ways, it's really a fairy tale start for them. I asked Alex this, and I'm going to ask it to you, too. Do you think that the Lions are going to keep it up, and do you think they're going to be able to make the playoffs this year?
Well, listen, them and Buffalo own the longest droughts in the league. It's been since 1999 that neither one of them has been to playoffs, and if I remember right, their last playoff appearances, the Bills was the Music City Miracle, and later that night was the Lions against the Redskins. They both lost, I believe, the same day. And they haven't been back to the playoffs since. Now,
was that the Detroit, Herman Moore teams in Detroit?
1999. I'm trying to think if Herman was still there. It's I'm
or
not
was it 94 was the year he made it.
Well, in the mid 90s, they were. They were a playoff team in 93 when they lost to the Packers. In 94 when they lost to the Packers. In 95 when they lost to the Eagles. And remember, they haven't won a playoff game since 91 when they beat the Cowboys.
Yeah.
But anyway, the 99 Lions, the last time they sniffed the playoffs, it's been a long time. But the Lions, to me, are less of a surprise than the Buffalo Bills because, you know, we didn't see the way the Bills ended the season. And they were 4-4 at the end of the year last year, but they got blown out their last two games. The Lions won their last four games last year. And whether people put any credence into that or not, a lot of times that does carry over to the following season, especially when you have a team that's just starting to gel. And just by the way, in terms of history, and you talk about your lifetime, my lifetime as well, the last time the Lions opened 5-0 was 1956.
Wow.
So, and they have a chance to do it, obviously, Monday night. They haven't played a Monday night game in a decade. And the one thing about the Lions is because they've been so bad as of late, they have made a great habit out of snapping these long streaks. Late last year, they lost 19 straight games in the division, and then they beat the Packers when they knocked Aaron Rodgers out of the game. They now won their last three division games. They had lost 26 games in a row on the road, an NFL record. Their previous record was 24 in a row. By the way, they also owned that. Now they've won their last five road games, including the last two in dramatic fashion. They also beat Minnesota this year, which they hadn't done since 1997. That was a streak of 13. And lo and behold, Monday night, they host the Bears, who have beaten them six times in a row and 10 of the last 12. Safe to say it will be a pretty raucous crowd in the Motor City Monday night.
Well, you have to remember, too, I remember very vividly last season when they played against the Bears on opening day. That was the game where Calvin Johnson caught what everybody and their mother thought was a winning touchdown, but he put the ball down too quick in the end zone, and the refs decided to rule it an incomplete pass. So you know that the Lions have a little extra emphasis on beating the Bears this week, and I think it's going to be one heck of a football game, personally. Russell, before
well, not
I
only
let you
extra,
go...
Not only extra emphasis on that, I also point out the fact not only have they lost six straight to the Bears, the last team to beat them last year were the Chicago Bears in Detroit.
Well, there you go. In many ways, it's a game that, in a number of fronts for them to really get over the hump. If they get to 5-0, I think they're about as legitimate as you can expect because 5-0 starts, regardless of how experienced or good your team has been historically, are fairly rare in the NFL. So a 5-0 Detroit Lions is Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, listen, and I'll just throw this out. Every once in a while, you get somebody gets off to a great start and then lays an egg. But the thing I'll throw out of the Lions is this is a team that, to me, that appears very solid in the offensive and defensive lines. In fact, you know, they've got a couple veteran there. You know, I heard Al talk about Jeff Backus and Dominic Raiola and so on, and those are guys who have been around for all these lean years. But I firmly believe that one of the reasons their offensive line has played better last year and also played a little up and down this year and so on. But when you practice against Ndamukong and Sue and those guys all the time, it has to make you better. So as we find out around this league, being good in the holes is the most important thing. And, you know, obviously with Julius Peppers coming to town, you want to protect him Monday night and so on. But this is just like a banner game for the Lions. And by the way, I'll just throw this out, and it's a long time away. Obviously, the only other undefeated team in the league is the Green Bay Packers, who they'd share the division with. The first Lions-Packers game this year, it's Thanksgiving in Detroit, obviously. The second Packers-Lions game this year is the finale at Lambeau Field. One can only hope that both teams have a full head of steam going into both games.
Well, that certainly would be wonderful. I think that's something that every football fan would want to see. Packers and Lions, an old-school rivalry, fighting it out for the NFC North Division, both of whom could be legitimate playoff contenders, and if they can keep winning games. But we all know the Packers are a Super Bowl contender, but hey, the Lions, if they go to 5-0, I think you have to start taking them serious as being one of the best teams in the NFL. So, all right, well, Russell, it was a real pleasure to have you on here on NFA Radio tonight. Before we let you go, last question. Do the Lions go to 5-0?
I believe they do. There's a lot of momentum with that team. I don't think it'll be easy. And a lot of it will depend on what they can do to Jay Cutler, who the Bears have had a lot of problems protecting, obviously, for various reasons. You know, Matt Forte had a great game against Carolina. Will he be able to do the same thing against the Lions? But, I mean, it's going to be very loud. It's going to be a lot of adrenaline. The Lions, like I said, they're on national TV on Thanksgiving, and they're actually, they get ridiculed for it because they haven't won a game. You know, how many times have you heard over the last 10 years, can we please get the Lions off Thanksgiving? To me, I hope that never happens because they've been on that, doing that since 1934. But it's prime time in the Motor City, and I think that they're going to be ready for a big primetime effort.
Well, there you go, folks. There it is. Both Alec Frost and Russell Baxter, and I'm going to go on hop on the bandwagon as well. We're picking the Lions to go to 5-0. Certainly is a rebound season in the Motor City. Russell, thank you so much for coming here on National Football Authority Radio, and hopefully we'll have you back on here soon.
That would be great. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back here on National Football Authority Radio. But don't go in.
Football Authority Radio, and I'd like to thank everybody so much for tuning in. But before you go, we got to make a few picks for this weekend's games in football. And I'm not talking just college football, I'm also talking the NFL. So here's the deal. Every Friday, I do my weekend picks for college football. You're going to get all of my picks there in glorious detail. But you know what? I never get a chance to pick the Thursday night game. So I'm going to pick that game for you guys here. And this week, it's a doozy. The Cal Golden Bears head to play at Oregon. And this is going to be a really great Pac-12 game. And you know what? Everybody's talking about how good Oregon is. But you know, Cal nearly beat them last year. If it wasn't for a false start on Cal's kicker, Oregon might not have gone undefeated. But this year, the game's not in Berkeley. This year, the game is in Eugene, Oregon. It's in Autzen Stadium. And frankly, I think it's going to be in Oregon's favor at the end of the day. Bax is taking the Oregon Ducks for his Thursday night lock. Put that in my official list of picks, and that all rest of which will be coming out on Friday. A lot of great games this weekend. But you know what? I'm also going to make a stone-cold lock in the NFL. And that there's a lot of good games this weekend. There's a lot of interesting games this weekend. But in my mind, the marquee game of the weekend is a rematch from last year's NFC divisional game between the Green Bay Packers and the Atlanta Falcons. And last time these two teams met, Green Bay ran Atlanta off the field. And you know what? I don't think the Falcons' defense is going to be nearly improved enough to slow down the great Packers' offense. But, the Falcons are going to give them a much better game this time around, and here's why. First of all, Falcons' offense is slowly coming into shape. Julio Jones, the rookie wide receiver out of Alabama, had a breakout week last week in Seattle. He is an absolute compliment to Roddy White and Tony Gonzalez in the passing game. And Michael Turner is just starting to get warmed up. Now, here's the deal. I live in Atlanta. I've done radio here in Atlanta. They're not going to like me in Atlanta for this pick. So I'm sorry in advance, especially to my dude Homer Hunter from 790. Shout out. And I'm sorry, bro. I got to take the Green Bay Packers in this one. They're going to 5-0 at the expense of the Falcons. But you know what? The Falcons are closing the gap. They're getting better. And I'm not ruling the Falcons out this year. They are making a run in the NFC South. But you know what? Right now, the Packers are just too good. Expect the Packers to win a high-scoring game on Sunday night. So that, I guess that concludes our show this week. Hey, thank you all so much for tuning in. Big shout-outs go out to Alec Frost and to Russell Baxter for coming on the show tonight and doing all kinds of NFL talk. And folks, keep an eye out this week. We got all kinds of preview stuff coming up on NationalFootballAuthority.com. I've already hyped my own picks for college football, but we got a lot of other great outlooks, lots of great updates and write-ups from all the games in the course of the weekend. And then, of course, on Monday, we got all the reaction from the NFL, the top 25 poll for college football, Heisman power rankings, you name it. It's out on National Football Authority. After all, we are the shooting star of football coverage on the internet, one of the fastest growing sites anywhere, bringing you all of your football needs. So thank you so much for tuning into the NFA Radio podcast. I am Matt Baxendale. By the way, follow me on Twitter, at Matt Baxendale, and follow National Football Authority, at NF Authority. By the way, Just read all the articles. It's worth it. You don't find better football coverage anywhere. So on behalf of everybody at NationalFootballAuthority.com, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's edition of NFA Radio. Enjoy the football game, folks, and have a great weekend. See ya!
I'll tell you all the story about the joker and the thief, sir. That was all.